What does a revolution look like today? It might look like thousands of young people camping out of Sri Lanka's seafront demanding political change. It might sound like Indonesian students chanting outside parliament after organizing protests overnight through the Signal app. Or it might be like thousands of young people in Nepal turning online outrage over corruption and nepotism into street demonstrations and political participation through the social media app Discord. Across Nepal, Indonesia, and Sri Lanka, a generation raised online is taking protests from screens to Asian streets. For this episode, I spoke with activists from Indonesia, Nepal, and Sri Lanka about how their actions help shape their countries in 2025, the year that we saw Gen Z revolutions in more than 10 countries around the globe. In Nepal, young activists have mobilized around corruption, governance, and political accountability. Students and young professionals have organized rallies, digital campaigns, and public debates. Messaging apps have allowed rapid coordination. Online platforms have created space for discussion that traditional politics did not always provide. Amasta Pinheiro, a journalist who has been in Nepal last year in December to report the story on the protests. Let's hear from Sartak Bhattarai, political reform activist from Nepal, on why Gen Z went to the streets.
I think the Gen Z protests in Nepal took place basically because we were tired of the government we were having, because it was a government that you worked in a musical chair of sorts. It were the same people governing us for multiple years, and they were old people who did not speak our language, did not understand what we were saying, and did not understand the flow of time. So I think it was always coming. Why it came on the day it came was because Nepal usually works the work and labor of young people. But the Nepalese government system does not really take into account their voices. And that has been happening over the years, over the election cycles, over the different systems of governance we had. And then we have tested out multiple systems of governance, and none of them actually responded to the youth. The trigger was a social media ban. In the modern times, where a lot of people were addicted to social media. That's their money-making process. That's their entertainment. That's their connection, communication, everything. So when that was a trigger, our protests were organized in against the corruption, against the social media ban that day. More people came out than was expected. And there was a terrible massacre on the roads on the day of the protests. And a day later, the protest turns violent. Citizens came out and started burning government buildings, beating up the police. So I think it was in answer to the previous massacre that happened when youth were just asking to be included.
Within 48 hours of protest, security forces had killed at least 76 people. The Supreme Court was set on fire, prisons were breached, police stations were overwhelmed, the police infrastructure was damaged. Sanskriti Pandey, sexual and reproductive rights young activist from Nepal, comments on the violence.
Young people were dying, so there was a lot of anger built. And people were like going to politicians' house, burning it down. So I was very concerned because one of the things that was widely being shared was like Nepal is burning right now. I did not want to lose all the progress we have done so far, because the point was not to burn everything down. Rather, it was to have a better accountability system.
How did you feel as a woman protesting?
There was a lot of like videos circulating, from rape threats to there were videos circulating. I think there were old videos circulating just for the sake of the fear. So they were like, girls hostel is like being targeted, you should call this. So there was a lot of narratives surrounding that as well during the protest, on like whether women in hostels will be targeted or not. And there were old videos as well that was being circulated as like, right now this is happening. So there was a lot of misinformation happening as well, especially targeted towards women.
And on December 11, the Nepal interim government was shaken by the unrest. And for the first time in history, a prime minister was elected on an app, social media app, Discord, by the people who were gathering on Discord. And so they voted and they elected the interim prime minister Sushila Karki to have the role. In Nepal, protests often build gradually through civic pressure and student organizing. Now let's turn to Indonesia, where university students have repeatedly mobilized quickly and at a scale when controversial laws were introduced. Indonesia, protests against controversial laws and political decisions have brought thousands into university campuses and into the streets. I'm with Micheline Salata, a young indigenous activist from Indonesia who explains the youth demands in the country that took them to the streets.
Yeah, during the protest, I was in Indonesia. That was actually after we had a youth consolidation in Jakarta. But I was not in Jakarta when the protest happened. So I already mobilized to another city, which I did my master's, which is in Yogyakarta. But still, the protest also happened there because the protest happened in several cities. But the most crowded and, you know, the most, I think, mobilized city is in Jakarta. But we still did our protest as well. We did a peaceful approach in Yogyakarta at that time. And we consolidated through online platforms to prepare ourselves of what we want to deliver in our demand during that day, because it was actually after the Independence Day celebration of Indonesia. So basically, it was the impact of 98 protest, and also the current protest is almost similar, where we face like economic destabilizations, and also we face like a number of livelihoods, like secure jobs for the youth. So basically, that's the demand as well. And also some demands related to the reform of police reform, militarization reform. And it's also related to human rights, legal protections. There has been many problems happen in our country for the recent decades, which is not being addressed well by our governments. And I think that that is the momentum is getting bigger and bigger, because there has been lack of responses towards this problem. And that is why the demand came into momentum during the Gen Z protest last year. And I think that as an indigenous youth who felt that type of oppressions in a grassroots level, we also have the same demand to our country, because we are not legally recognized in our country. And most of the time when the deforestation happened, when they want to open like a mining concession in our indigenous communities, they don't consult it to us. And I think that that is when we connect the dots between what happened in the grassroots and what's also happened for the youth in the city, especially like in Jakarta.
Were indigenous youth part of the protests?
If you want to take a look at the protests that happened in Jakarta, we don't really see much of representation of indigenous youth there, because we live in our respective indigenous communities, which is far away from Jakarta. But then when we did our own protests in our own region, that's what we demand. So the demand was quite different between one parts of places to another. And that is why we connected more to the human rights legal protections, because we are also impacted by the policies, with the law, with the bill which is being implemented by the government, which is not on the side of the indigenous people, of the side of the indigenous youth. And there has been a lot of concerns regarding the human rights defenders recently, especially in the current regime. And that is why we voice that a lot, not only during the protests, but ever since then, it's getting stronger.
That's interesting when you say that it was consolidated virtually. So I would like to understand, what was the role of social media or technology platforms during using the protests? When you mean consolidated virtually, that the youth gathered in an app, or how was that done?
Yeah, it was done very particularly in several apps. And we also had like a Zoom calls. We have a Signal group. And this already happened since, I think, 2022, 2023. Because at that time, G20 meeting also happened in Indonesia, and there has been a lot, like people's movement rises from that, who wants to challenge the G20 about the different agenda that is very important instead of the G20 agenda, right? And then since then, we had virtual consolidation happening sometimes monthly or bi-monthly. And then I think that the Gen Z or even the young people in general, they are mostly thinking that the social media is their safe space. So basically, when they want to do anything related to protests or related to addressing their demands, they have to consolidate it to other organizations as well, so they can gain support. Since we are located in a very diverse geographical area, that is why this virtual consolidations is very important, and it's very functional in a way that it's successful to let other voices be addressed as well, because we don't want to concentrate only on the voices of the youth in Jakarta, right? There has been like a very massive complex problem that happened in other parts of Jakarta, especially in the Eastern Indonesia where I am from. And these type of imbalances is completing the demands that comes from the youth in Jakarta as well. And I think that even though that some, we cannot say that it has been successfully covering everything, but at least we get the sense of what happened really in Indonesia when that protest is done.
Yeah, so do you feel monitored, or do you have like a case that you were surveilled like online?
Yeah, I think many times that actually happened. We got terrors as well, like we get WhatsApp message terrors from Intel, and we don't know who the people exactly, and we cannot accuse because if we accuse, we will be you know, captured and we will be sentenced, and that is just not the thing that we want to happen to us. But yes, we got like very terrorized messages to us, who ask us to stop, or more frequently our family are also being you know, assaulted through messages. And that is the thing that we don't want to see to our families, because they are far from us, for example, and we don't know what happened to them. So sometimes when this happened, we consolidate it to our friends who are lawyers, so they can have, you know, somehow a consolidated safeguarding mechanism towards this.
Do you feel that the police was also had a like tension or over violence during the demonstrations, like if the tensions escalated at any point?
Of course, it's always like that. You know, the militarization in Indonesia is, I think, one of the most government mechanism in terms of addressing civic participation in Southeast Asia. Of course, we see other places like the Philippines as well and Myanmar. But then in Indonesia, it's also like the worst, but it's not really portrayed in the media. And we are very, how to say it? We want to say it's very unfortunate that the reality doesn't really portray and doesn't really successfully portray what really happened in Indonesia, especially in the eastern part of Indonesia. It's always been a tension, of course. It's always been a tension. And there is already like a stigma towards us, the civil society. If we protest, then we are rebelling towards the government. We want to create a new set of a government, but that is not the thing that we want. We only want our voices to be heard. We want their accountability of what happened. We want their accountability of the law that they already passed, which is, you know, disadvantaging most of the youth, most of the marginalized groups. And every time we do this, they always see us as an enemy. And that is why the police all also face us with tensions on the field. Most of the time, what they did is violence, physical violence, disappearance of people. And during the Gen Z protests, we lost a lot of friends. And most of them were found already dead. And that is something that we have to really question about. Like, what really happened to them? Why we our friends had to face that kind of, you know, oppressions while we only want to exercise our democratic rights, right? So that is the kind of frustration that we always face with the police.
And since the protests, what has changed politically, socially, or personally? Are there any demands that were resolved?
We had this type of monitor when we did the protests, if you ever heard about 17 plus 8. which is referred to the protests of Indonesians, GNC protests last year, which is also representing the 17th is the date of our independence and 8 is the month. So 17 plus 8, and it's also representing the 17 plus 8 demands. But then we see that there has been a very slow progress regarding that. Even when some of the youth representatives delivered that demand to one of the parliament representations there has been very, very less progress. And I would say that it's only like a very tokenistic approach. Because what's really happening is that beyond that 17 plus 8, I myself as a youth would say that the 17 plus 8 itself is not addressed. What about the other demands which is not included in 17 plus 8? So yeah, basically, currently we feel like there is still less and less responses from the government because, again, as I said, they see us as an enemy. So they cannot find a way on how to engage with us. We already tried to engage with them. There is always a demand that we want to deliver. They would say that we are complaining about what has been given to us. And the thing is just the most of the regulations are not based on the people's needs, are not based on the current situations that representing us. So basically, there is no bridge that can, you know, make us meet in between.
Do you think there is a connection between Gen Z protests in Asia in terms of global solidarity?
I think there is one question that we have to address to ourselves, which is when will this systemic change happen? Because what happened in Nepal, what happened in Indonesia, what happened in other countries who also had their protests after August last year was actually very much related. Like Gen Z resembles the same nature in themselves, even though we are geographically different. But I think the system has failed us and the system has changed. And I think that also the Gen Z have the sensitivity about the injustice that happening in each issues, you know. I'm working very closely with the indigenous people, with the indigenous youth, addressing climate change and also like sexual and reproductive rights. And I think that's what we experience at the moment, the injustice that happened to us, it's because of the product of the system itself, and the system has failed us. So I think that what really happened is not only about the trigger point that, for example, people would connect, oh, this has happened in Indonesia, why don't we do this in Bangladesh as well or in Nepal? It's not like that. It's because the system is already changing, and it's changing to the negative point that it disadvantages people and the youth who are, you know, who are still thinking about their future. So I think that is my take on you know, the talking about global solidarity.
Indonesia shows how digital culture and street protests can work together. Now let's go to Sri Lanka. I'm with Sulishana Paris, filmmaker of Go Home Gotha, a self-funded documentary exploring the 2022 Aragalaya protest movement. It was centered on the hashtag Go Home Gotha and calls for the then president Gotabaya Rajapaksa resignation. This revolution, also led mostly by university students, was the first call for economic balance in the country. That was also the reason for the last year revolution.
I have a background, educational background in social movements, and I did my master's thesis on Egypt's revolution, 2011 revolution. So I looked at the role of social media in Egypt's revolution. So back then, when it happened, I was wishing that there was a similar uprising in Sri Lanka because, you know, at the time in Sri Lanka, it was post-war, and the way the war ended, you know, causing a lot of damage, deaths, and all that needed to be, you know, investigated, allegations of war crimes, crimes against humanity to top leaders, military and political in our country. And also like people's, you know, sentiments, you know, the people were hurt, like the Tamils in living in the Northeast. So those needed to be dealt with. You know, as a country, we can't move forward, you know, without dealing with these things, you know, accountability issues and justice issues. So I was wishing that people, particularly in the South, came onto the streets and, you know, we protested, we showed solidarity, people in the Northeast area. So I was wishing this when the economic crisis happened.
This economic crisis in 2022 that Solzhenitsyn is explaining led to the removal of Rajapaksa as president and created a power vacuum temporarily filled by Ranil Wickremesinghe, who had long protected elite interests. Youth movements had pushed not just for leadership change, but for systemic reform, including anti-corruption measures and stronger democratic institutions. While the full reform was limited, grassroots parties like the NPP and JVP used public support to win the 2024 presidential and 2025 parliamentary elections, giving youth activists a voice. But economic challenges, debt, and disaster recovery remain. The spirit of Gautam Gota, digital-first, youth-led, and focus on accountability set the stage for last year's protests. As the economic crisis deepened, young people returned to the streets. Fuel shortages, inflation, and power cuts made daily life unbearable. They created protest spaces that double as civic classrooms, using murals, music, discussions, and community kitchens to turn activism into participation, while social media carried their message worldwide.
Because of social media, only this happened. No, it doesn't happen like that. People have to come to the streets. You know, everything happens online. There is no numbers, visible numbers of people on the streets in their thousands coming every day. Nothing would have actually, you know, happened if everything was limited to online. So online, of course, it's facilitated that solidarity building, protest framing, of course, the hashtag. So it's solidarity and also enticing people, you know, in order for activists who are out there in the epicenter to mobilize protest participants. Of course, online was very important to communicate with other, you know, people, other citizens, also other activists. So it's the mobilization, communication, and solidarity building, protests, you know, narratives, framing, all that. Social media played a big, huge, you know, role.
Let's do a summary of the achievements. Across the region, Gen Z protests delivered concrete political outcomes. In Nepal, young people took to the streets over corruption, economic stagnation, and a government social media ban, and within days forced the Prime Minister K.P. Sharma Oli to resign, lift the ban, and use Discord to help select Sushila Karki as the country's first female interim prime minister while triggering early elections. That was just now in March this year. In Indonesia, students mobilized rapidly against controversial laws and democratic backsliding, pushing the government to revise or delay legislation and respond to public pressure through mass student-led demonstrations. In Sri Lanka, youth rose up against economic collapse, fuel shortages, inflation, and power cuts, and later helping create a political shift that brought new leadership into government, even if deeper economy reform remains unfinished. Across Asia, Gen Z is reshaping activism, using social media to mobilize, educate, and connect, while also facing surveillance, backlash, and political resistance. They've already forced designations, influenced elections, and shifted public debate. But the bigger question remains: can this energy translate into lasting structural change? For many of the activists we heard from, this is just the beginning. I'm Esther Pinheiro. This is Viral Resistance, Gen Z Revolution for Justice Across Asia. Thanks for listening.